Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. This is Lisa Anderson, and let me be the one to, on behalf of the Boundless crew, wish you a very Merry Christmas. I'm so excited that you are spending a little bit of your Christmas holiday with us. Hopefully you have a mug of hot chocolate or a mocha or maybe an entire cheesecake to eat while you are listening with us. Later on in the show, we had an idea from one of our listeners, Bethany Bennett. She wanted Boundless staff to talk about our favorite Christmas memories. So we'll be doing that coming up. Then for our culture, also a little twist on our show, something that we don't normally do. We're going to do a story. This is about a guy who takes a late night stroll alone that ends up changing his life. It is a story by Al Andrews and is called A Walk One Winter Night. So maybe a few tears in this one too, people. So be ready for that. Okay, here we are for our round table. We have got Jake, Catherine, and Matt here. Hi, guys.
Hey. What it be?
Okay, let's give... we all know, okay, Jake here managing social media at Focus. Catherine's our show producer. Matt works for Axis, fun apologetic ministry out there. Check it out. But I want to kick off, before we start into our roundtable topic, I want us all to give our favorite Christmas present ever. Okay, Matt, you have to go first this time.
Oh, man, this is like stereotypical Michigan kid, but I got my first pair of hockey skates when I was in high school, and that's when I started skating, and it was an absolute joy ever since.
That's fabulous. Okay.
Mine's hard because my parents are great at giving gifts. Honestly, they always find good things, but when I was little, I loved Blue's Clues, and I got the thinking chair, and I sat in it all day.
My kids love Blue's Clues.
Oh, yeah.
How old are you? No, I'm kidding. My favorite one was actually the Christmas that my parents bought a ping pong table. And we had a massive, like, 2-3 day ping pong tournament, like multiple tournaments just back to back. And that's a Christmas that I still look back on and remember. So there you go.
Aw.
Oh, sounds that's pretty really cool. When I was in third grade, my grandma, my mom, the previous year had made me a doll. And she made me a doll. And then my doll had a little doll that she made. And each of them had matching outfits, like probably 10 outfits that all matched. It was just rocking. But then the Christmas after, my grandma and grandpa made furniture for my doll. So I got a bed and a dresser, and I mean, it was just
that's
hardcore.
That's huge. You guys don't understand.
No, for a little girl, like,
it was totally handcrafted.
That's so cool.
I mean, it was. Cool. And the fact that your doll had a doll, like, that's cool.
No,
your
had a doll? That's super that's
that was back in the day when people actually knew how to make stuff, people. It wasn't just about going on eBay and grabbing
stuff. I whittled
something.
A stick
little
last year.
I'm
super proud of myself.
Whittled a stick. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about...
This is my handiwork.
This is a fun roundtable, you guys, because we're kind of turning it on its ear, and we took questions from our Boundless listeners. And so they basically called in with their questions, and we are going to answer them collectively as a roundtable. And so... Get serious, people, and give good answers. Don't be lame, okay? I'm just going to put it out there. Just be honest, okay? We're
no
trying
promises.
To help people out.
That's a lot of pressure.
We're trying to help people out. Okay, so they're going to actually ask the questions themselves, and the first one we got is from Theron from Indiana.
Seems to be around the Christmas time as a single that you really just have to struggle and try to deal with your loneliness around the holidays. And so my question is, how do you deal with your loneliness while being reminded of a passage like 1 Corinthians 7:32-35 that talks about securing your undivided devotion to the Lord. So how can we focus on our undivided devotion to the Lord rather than our loneliness around the holidays? Thank you.
Thanks, Theron. This question is hard to answer, and I think a lot of people that called in actually asked this question. We got like 4 or 5 of this exact question. One thing I've done this year to focus more on the Lord for Christmas is my church gave out Advent devotionals, and I've always thought Advent was just the thing where they light the candle every Sunday. Of course, I know there's more to it, but so I read this devotional every day, and it's just about people living life during this season of life and all the aspects of it, like, you know, bringing up grief or past your past or just different things. And it's really cool to remember every morning, okay, this is preparing for the Lord. What about you guys? What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's just something to be said. So a lot of people go home for the holidays, and that's kind of my biggest struggle with a loneliness factor here is I'm all of a sudden in a much less exciting atmosphere. No shots to my parents there, but like there's a wood stove and I sit by the wood stove and my routine is very different. So I think there's a lot to be said for sticking to the routine, especially if your routine includes some scripture, some like meditating on Advent sort of passages in the mornings or evenings and prayer. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, just sticking to the kind of the roles, the postures, and the habits that you had in your normal life, even when you're in a different environment, that can add a lot of consistency and peace. Yeah.
I think there's something that just being brought out of your regular routine. I mean, here we are, we complain of being so busy and just crazy and whatever, and all of a sudden now we're complaining about being lonely or alone. And so I would recommend, one, just lean into that and realize that you're not going to feel that way all the time. I think the holidays have a unique way of bringing that around and bringing up those feelings. So be okay with that and use it as a time to really lean into the Lord himself and spend some time in scripture and be like, wow, why am I feeling this way? And what does this look like? And what is God trying to tell me? The other thing, just on a practical level, is two things. One, as you're approaching Christmas, plan ahead and look ahead. So if you know, do not wake up on Christmas morning and have no one that you are going to see all day and let it hit you. Like the, you know, make sure that going into the holidays, if being around people is important to you, you be an inviter. Figure out what you're going to do. Either, you know, either worm your way into someone's celebration or come up with one yourself. Make it happen. Find some people to celebrate. Find somewhere to be so that you you don't find yourself just alone and all of a sudden, you know, you're in a big tear fest. And then look ahead. 2018, what is God going to do in and through you in 2018? When January comes around, you're going to hit the ground running again. And so realize that this time of solitude, this time of reflection will pass, will end. Everyone's going to get back to their normal lives. And so you have a lot to look forward to in the coming months. Okay, next question.
Hi, this is Kaylin calling from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. My question is with online dating during the holidays. My natural tendency is to get to know people who are not maybe a good fit out of an urge to be in a relationship. What are some things I can do to walk wisely as my emotions and longings feel much more intense during the Christmas season? Love to hear your ideas. Thanks.
Hey, Kaylin, I've definitely felt this same sort of feeling, not over the winter, but over the summer months. Every year I'd come home from college and I'd be back in the same sort of town with the same sort of crowd. And there was always one or two girls that all of a sudden became absurdly attractive to me, even though I knew, like, these were not really girls I was interested in, but it was like the summertime and the summer sort of fling. And I imagine it's just kind of the same thing over the winter. So I definitely get what you're saying there.
I think everybody kind of does that subconsciously a lot. For me, if I go on social media around this time of year, it seems like everyone gets engaged. You guys know what I mean? Like November, December, there's just picture and picture and picture after people getting engaged, or, you know, they're planning a wedding now and my friends are posting about they said yes to the dress. And so I think kind of staying off social media and talking to my actual friends in real life reminds me that I'm not the only one that's not getting engaged, first off. And second, I think asking my friends if I start being interested in somebody that I'm like, why do I like them? I don't know. I think one thing that could be something, you know, maybe there is a reason you like them that's legitimate, but also maybe I am just doing it out of I want to be with somebody. So asking my friends, like, what do you think of this person? Do you think that this is an actual fit, or am I just being silly?
Yeah, I'm going to give just a very ridiculously practical suggestion, and that is maybe take a break from online dating around the holidays. It might be your time just to be like, you know what? I just need to back off. I need to spend time doing other things. And find your friends that aren't dating, that are kind of in a similar situation. They're not, you know, maybe whether you're online dating or not, but they're not in relationships. They're not getting engaged. They're not going to fuel this fire of envy or whatever you're going through, disappointment and stuff like that. It might just be a good time to step back and then realize, you know what, a new year is coming up and I can jump back in this and not have it be so fueled by emotion around the holidays.
Yeah, I mean, just the feeling of desperation. I have a tendency to say, oh, everyone my age is getting engaged. And then I think of my four closest friends and none of them are even dating anybody. So I'm like, you know, I think
it's
social media.
Perspective.
Yeah, right, yeah, right.
Definitely. So, well, good thoughts, you guys. And I appreciate that. And I hope that, Kaylin, you appreciate that as well. You're not in this alone. All right, next question.
Hi, my name is Ben from Vancouver, Washington. When it comes to Christmas time, it's common to spend time with family and friends, but what are your thoughts on being invited to spend time with the family or friends of a romantic interest? What are some guidelines to keep in mind?
Ben, I'm glad you asked this one because I have the same question. I'm about to walk into this scenario pretty soon with my girlfriend's family. We've been dating for a few months, and this will be the first real interaction with family and extended family. So I'm kind of looking at how to navigate it with her family as well as my family and bringing her into that too. So it's a big mix, and it'll be interesting to see how it all kind of plays out. I kind of wonder what our roundtable here has to say, though.
I'm wondering what our married guy has to
yeah.
say.
Yeah, that's Jake, token married guy. Well, there's a couple of big things you want to remember. First, stay away from controversial topics. So instead of talking about the weather, make sure you talk about a lot of politics. People yeah. love talking. No, I'm just kidding.
Talk about the weather.
Don't talk about politics. Avoid politics. And if other people talk about politics, run. No. Okay.
Run.
Sorry. Those
run.
Are all.
Run.
Those are all the
things
not to do.
Okay, then theology.
Matt's taking notes
here. Theology is the other thing.
Matt, is this helping at all?
This is so good. This is why the Boundless Show exists. It just hit home.
All right. Practically speaking, I think the hardest thing in this situation is remembering that it's not about ourselves, especially at the holidays where oftentimes there is a lot of traditions and people that we want to see. And so when we're going to see the family of our romantic interest, there's going to be a lot of things that they do differently, a lot of conversations that maybe you don't want to jump into. And so it takes a lot of patience and a lot of kind of self-sacrificial mindset behind the scenes to say, you know what, I'm engaging with people that are important to my significant other, to my romantic interest. And so I've got to kind of set myself to the side and navigate this with grace. And that can be, that can be hard in our own families. But I think especially so when we don't know people and we don't even have context, sometimes for some people that's easier, for some people that's harder, but it's good to remember that we've got to step outside ourselves and what we want to engage with other families and how they're processing the holidays.
I have two things I want to add to. The first one is make sure you define the relationship before the holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What level of relationship?
Yeah, because they're going to ask. Like,
then the siblings and parents ask you
right.
in front of them.
And,
yeah, that would be
and
good.
If they're just a friend, but they're of the opposite gender, it's kind of weird. But at the same time, I think if that's what you really are, then don't pretend like you're not. You know what I mean? But just, I would say, talk about it with the person you're bringing before you go. What are we going to say when they ask?
Get that DT.
The second thing is really talking to myself, and it's relaxed, because I tend to get so nervous about stuff like that. Either like if I'm going to someone else's house, I'm like, what are they going to think of me? Or if they're coming to my house, I'm like, what if something goes wrong? Or what if my family and them don't mesh? But you know, like my mom tells me this a lot, just relax, you know, like in the scheme of things, this is a very small thing. You might look back on it and laugh someday. There might be some awkward pictures that end up, you know, in the family photo albums. Like someday they're like, oh, who was that guy with you that year? But you know, like in the end, it's not a huge deal, even though it might feel like one.
Yeah. And yeah, find those ways to lighten it up. The
right.
very first time I ever had a holiday with my wife before we were married, when we were dating, I got a massive hair in the mashed potatoes that like got halfway down my throat, and I had to like pull it out like a spaghetti noodle. And like there was no dignified way that I was going to get that out.
Did you do that at the table?
Yeah. Oh, what else do you, I mean, it was like, excuse me, I got to go pull this hair out of my esophagus. But that is still a cherished Thanksgiving memory.
She still married you after that? Whew, there's hope.
Wait,
for us,
it's
guys.
My fault?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this is my fault?
Well,
they're putting hair on
the
table.
Oh, my
goodness.
That's all whose hair was it, right?
Okay, and then the only thing that I'm going to add is do not make or break the relationship based on your first impression of their family. So I think it's easy to go into a situation.
Yeah.
It's different from your family. You don't know these people, and you're just going to go in and paint caricatures of them, and that is not who these people are.
Yeah,
so,
like the guy who pulls a hair out of his throat.
Right. I mean,
probably really cool, but
yeah. Had his wife not given him a chance post hair, Jake would still be
That's
single.
A great
still
point.
Be single.
That's a great
That
point.
Was my one shot.
Yeah.
So good point. So
okay, well that's great. I appreciate the question and the advice.
All right, well next question.
Hello everyone. My name is Elena. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky. And my question is about what do we do when we're going home for the holidays? And we're going to be with a lot of non-believing family members. And how do we best convey the true meaning of Christmas to them? Thanks so much. Bye.
This is a hard one. I feel like that would be a very hard situation to be in. I mean, I don't have many family members who are non-believers, so I don't know what responsibility she probably feels to, you know, lead them to the Lord at this time.
I think for me, I definitely have extended family that aren't believers. And I, you know, it's interesting because I have tried to force this in the past where I've been like, oh, this is, you know, many of them are out of state. And so I feel like this is my one opportunity to just be like, you know, here are the four spiritual laws, and please, you know, listen to all of them and respond and whatever. I think the first thing I have to do is go in setting my expectations low, because especially if you want to have this super meaningful Christmas and it's going to be Jesus this and Jesus that, and all they're talking about is like what they got or what they didn't get, or, you know, the commercialism of it or whatever, you're going to be disappointed. So I think the biggest things that have been meaningful for me and that I found to be effective are just to sit down and listen, to ask a meaningful question of someone just about their year, just asking them something like, what was the highlight of their year, or what are they most looking forward to in the next year, or something, just a question that allows them to kind of share, and then listen and respond and ask a follow-up question and just be genuine and really caring about them and not having, you know, not being preachy. You don't have to come after them with a bunch of stuff, but just be a great listener, and give a lot of grace. I mean, be prepared to, you know, people are going to say crazy stuff. People are going to probably be in fights. When you get a lot of people together, there's a lot of tension and stuff. Just give a lot of grace and be the person who's there to put an arm around their shoulder and there to really care. And then as you have an opportunity, you know, maybe even weigh in on something that was meaningful to you this year, or something that God really taught you. And don't be afraid to give the credit to the Lord himself. You know, he can speak for himself. He can defend himself, and he can certainly draw people unto himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think we often feel the pressure to, like salespeople, to always be closing. Mm-hmm. And it's like every time I have a conversation with my non-believing friend or family member, I've got to give them the altar call. I got to make sure they have that chance to accept the Lord. And it's just practically speaking, it's not effective. The best and most meaningful faith conversations that I've had where I've been able to really get into the gospel with people have come exactly like to Lisa's point, through just listening to people, listening to the hurts and the pains that they're going through, and being a good friend and getting to know them. And when they feel known, and when they feel cared for, and when they feel like you're truly involved and interested in who they are as a person, they are way more open to deeper conversations. And that's where you can really start to minister the truth of the gospel into the practical things in their lives. And so don't force it. Don't always be closing. Like, that's the Holy Spirit's job ultimately. Mm-hmm. Our job is to be the relationship. The hands and feet of Jesus is a relational metaphor. Mm-hmm. Get to know mm-hmm. people. Be involved with them. Let them know that you care about them as people.
Come on. That's right.
That's yeah, I think that's so true. And I think I actually have a couple friends who are going into Christmas situations with family members that they don't have a great relationship with. And we were talking about this, and really their game plan, I mean, not that they're all like gamey about it, but it is really, how can I serve this person, this sibling, this person that I'm at odds with, and really show them, you know, not lead with, well, remember how you hurt me, or remember how you're wrong about this, or remember, but just putting themselves forward again and again. What am I going to be able to do to meet their needs, to care for them, to serve them while we're together, and just let my actions speak in that way. Okay, I think we have another question.
Hey, Boundless. Gabe from Connecticut here. So the holidays have always been a really special time for me, especially now as an adult getting to go back home and see family and friends. But I struggle with going back to the normal routine of life once the season has come and gone, especially being single. What are some ways that you deal with the January letdown?
Hey, Gabe, and thanks so much for your question. The first thing that came to mind is that I have actually twice, been dumped on Christmas Eve, one time by email.
That's just
so
terrible.
It kind
yeah.
of set a bad tone. It was like I was super anticipating Christmas, and I was home with family, and then I was just like slain because I was expecting to be talking about my awesome relationships, and I didn't. Really, it was almost like, it's like when you have a death in the family, you're buoyed by the hubbub, by the guests, the visitors, the food trains and stuff, and then everyone leaves and you're kind of left. And that's what January felt like for me, because it felt like I was going back into the normal, same old routine of life. But obviously I didn't have the excitement of the relationship that I was hoping. And so I think for me, one thing that's been hugely important for me in January is to really look ahead at the year and really come up with some great things that I want God to do in and through me. So to just look and say, what's going to be different about this year? What will be different having lived this coming year as opposed to, you know, kind of where I came from? It's very, a lot of people like shedding off the previous year and being like, oh, you know, that was a terrible year or that was an okay year or whatever. But now this year is going to be great. And there's no guarantees. You don't know what's going to happen to you, what's going to come into your life or whatever. But I think for me, it's just looking ahead at the year. What do I want to be different about this year? And then just one fun little practical thing is come up with something this year, or, you know, we're kind of getting down to the wire this year, but or early on in January, plan something fun, even if it's a weekend away with friends or if it's a special vacation or just a day where you can kind of hang out, go hiking by yourself, do something to look forward to that you can put on your calendar, know that you're going to make happen, that's going to just interrupt the humdrum of what will be your life. And so just a little hack that I like to do heading into a new year.
Yeah. I'm going to add on to your hack and say maybe that sort of outing or whatever it is could involve like a new hobby that you pick up at mm-hmm. the beginning of the year. So then in June, you go for a rock climbing trip, I don't know, in Utah somewhere.
Ooh.
But you, in January, you start rock climbing. You start to learn like how it works and get a little gear and play with it.
I want to do that this year. I really want to run a half marathon, and I've been finishing up college, so I haven't. But I want to start training in January and then hopefully run one by spring, like March. So another thing, like to what Lisa said, so I've been dealing with that lately because I'm finishing college or just finished college. And I was worried that since I'm such a busy person and I've been busy for the last, 16 years of my life with school, mm-hmm. I was like, what does life look like outside? Like, I don't even know. So I've started making a list of all the things I want to do after college, and it's gotten really long, and it's helped me like look forward to that time. Like, okay, here's a new, like, this is a new adventure. So I think, like Lisa said, making a list. Two other practical things, actually, I guess three. The first one, again, social media does not help with like this January letdown feeling, especially if everyone's posting about great things that happened to them or new adventures. So I would probably stay off social media.
And follow everybody, but focus on the family. We share super encouraging things. Jake Roberson.
So this is so true. I'm just going to interrupt Catherine here. This is so true because people have been tagging me in this like for 7 days, post a black and white photo of yourself or whatever. So I did it. But everyone else's photos, I'm like, your photos look just as awesome as they do all the time. This is supposed to be like your ordinary life, people. So I posted one of like dirty dishes and stuff. I'm determined to just like fight the fabrication of Facebook.
Folded laundry.
Yeah. I'm like, let's talk about our lives, people. Laundry. Don't show me your awesome Christmas tree with like your mug of hot coffee and awesome like whatever craft you're working on. I don't want to see it. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great point. And so the second thing is exercise. Honestly, it sounds cheesy, but it really helps. Mm. And it's also a way to make friends. So, you know, join a new gym or something.
Rock climbing.
The third thing is something rock climbing.
That's my hobby for
the
year.
Not quite as practical, but I think it's cool. So I read somewhere that some people suggest that you pick a word for your year. Have you guys heard about this? Just one word. So they pray about it in December.
Doritos.
It's usually more spiritual than that, but you can pick Doritos. And something like grace or love, or, you know, maybe not love, that's a little too far, but just something that you want to shape your year, just sacrifice. And then you pray over that word all year. And I think it's cool. And then you can see how God works through your life in that area.
Yeah. I think mine is probably the most practical of all. So get ready for this. No. One of the problems with January, everybody takes down their Christmas lights, and it's super sad.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your Christmas lights up longer.
That's a great idea.
Put them up in your room if you haven't already. Seriously, I think that's one of the biggest problems. We humans crave light. January, there's just less of it. It's gray. Ooh. It's dingy.
Yeah.
Keep those warm Christmas lights up in your room or somewhere in your house or your cubicle at work. However you can do that helps me a lot.
And please keep your Christmas tree up until at least January 1st, people. If I see a Christmas tree out on December 26th, I want to go knock on that door and be like,
and I'm going to come with you.
I heard a story the other day about this family that was unwrapping presents, and they finished unwrapping, and the mom came in, took all the decorations off the tree, picked up the tree, and took it outside. I was like, oh.
That's a straight up tragedy.
That is not okay. That person's an adult now.
There must have been an argument that day. There was some argument about who cleaned up.
All right. Well, hopefully we have weighed in with some insight for these questions. Of course, there are some of you out there that are struggling with really deep stuff. And of course, heading into a new year is a hard time to tackle a lot of that. If you have something that you're walking through right now, and I mean, we know prayer is important. community is important. Being in the Word of God is important. But if you just need an extra push or just extra encouragement or guidance, we want you to call Focus on the Family's Counseling Department. This is a free-to-you call. It's a consult. You call 1-855-771-4357. Again, 1-855-771-4357. Or go to focusonthefamily.com and type in counseling in the search bar, and you will be able to reach a member of our team. They can talk with you, pray with you, and then give you a referral to someone local in your area who would be a good fit, maybe to march you through January, hopefully with joy and moving forward into the new year. So, but we loved answering your questions as well. So we were privileged to do it.
Yeah,
thanks,
definitely.
You guys, for doing
yes.
that.
Thank
all
you.
A child is born, a son is given, a son is given, the Messiah.
For today's culture, we have something special for you. We actually have Al Andrews, who's going to tell us a story about a guy who takes a late night stroll alone that ends up changing his life. Listen in as Al Andrews tells the story of A Walk One Winter Night.
It was cold that winter evening as I ambled down my quiet street. I needed a walk to clear my mind of all the clutter and stress of this season. It seems that every year it gets worse. More obligatory parties, irritated drivers and panicky shoppers, long lines everywhere. I remember a time when I was more expectant, when the reason for all this celebrating meant everything to me. But sadly, this night, my internal monologue was, "Let's just get this thing over and get back to normal." Frankly, my cynicism troubled me. And when I am troubled, I take a walk. Even if it's near midnight, even if it's cold, even if there are still things to be done. The hour was late and a light rain was falling. Stray flakes of snow twirled and mingled in. From windows and trees, the lights of the season sparkled through the heavy mist like stars aching to beam brightly on this dreary, dark night. Turning up my collar, I pulled my jacket tighter. That kind of cold finds its way through most any opening. As I walked, I saw them out of the corner of my eye. Mary, Joseph, the baby Jesus, displayed in a wooden stable in someone's front yard. The usual characters were assembled as well. Shepherds, sheep, a camel, the wise men three. On the stable's roof, a precariously perched angel looked on and was tilting slightly to the left. All of them were illuminated by two bright floodlights, shining from the grass in front of them. I almost passed them by. They were easy to miss, as I've grown accustomed to their presence. They are, after all, available everywhere in all sizes, ornament size, mantel size, coffee table size, and yard size. They come in a box, easy to assemble. But that night, and I'm not sure why, something caused me to turn my head, inviting me to linger. I stopped to look at them for a while, as one would stand in front of a Rembrandt painting in a museum. I must admit, it felt somewhat odd and awkward. After all, grown-ups don't pause and stare at yard manger scenes. But for some reason, that night, that moment, I felt I should be there, to witness something, to see. I folded my arms and I looked, obedient to this mysterious nudge. She wore blue. Mary always wears blue. A neatly pressed, clean blue garment. Her face, porcelain and untouchable, had a fixed expression, pleasant and peaceful. With her fragile hands folded in prayer, she gazed down adoringly at her child. She was perfect, this Mary, pristine, with moisture glistening on her smooth ceramic shawl. Joseph wore brown. Joseph always wears brown. Brown is a fitting color for a character relegated to the background, for someone who never gets top billing. His eyes appeared vacant and his beard was neatly trimmed. He was there as he always is, on the edges. He can't seem to find his place. Everyone else has something distinctive, wings, crowns, gifts, halos, a shepherd's crook. But all he has is brown. Then there was the baby Jesus, his tiny arms extended, the star attraction. A halo encircled his little head, reaching from ear to ear. A clean white fabric wrapped around him. Swaddled, I suppose, is the appropriate Christmas word to use. He smiled an unearthly smile. He's always happy, this manger Jesus. It looked like he'd never slept and never cried. It didn't appear that he wanted to be held, nursed, or cuddled either. I won't take the time to describe the others, but you know them well. You probably even know where each is positioned in the stable. The shepherds go there, the camels and sheep over there, the wise men there, there, and there. I imagine you, too, are accustomed to their presence. I remain standing, trying to stay warm. Looking at them through the gauzy mist, I pondered. I simply couldn't relate to them in any way. They seemed remote and untouchable, just like this season had become for me. With considerable guilt, I wondered, why don't I like these people? After this abrupt and irreverent thought came to me, I half expected the ground underneath to open up and swallow me whole, or a bolt of lightning to descend with a flash and a snap, leaving a little pile of smoldering ashes that used to be me. I closed my eyes and waited for the end. Thankfully, neither the heavens nor the ground opened, so I continued my gaze. And then something happened, something I frankly don't expect you to believe. I heard a noise coming from Mary's direction. It startled me. "Who's that?" I said. Though her figure didn't move, a soft voice pleaded. "This is not me," she cried. "This is not real," and her voice broke. "Please, listen to me. My garment, it isn't this clean, and it's not this brilliant shade of blue. It's a blue faded by the dust of a long journey to Bethlehem. It smells of my sweat and of the mule whose back I rode upon. My blue is stained with red, the blood of birth. It's soiled by the dung of a stable floor. And my face, my real face, is blemished. I'm a teenage girl. My brow is furrowed from worry. Worry about this baby, about tomorrow. What will Herod do? Will he find us? And my eyes are red from tears of pain. I'm so lonely and afraid. This is my first baby and my mother is not here with me. This is not who I am, she said again. I am real. Please, let me be real. And her voice trailed off. Her words, both gentle and moving, reached inside of me so deeply I could barely breathe. And while I was catching my breath, I heard a deeper voice. "You are wrong about me too." It was coming from Joseph's direction. "This is not me. This is not real. Please, listen to me," he said firmly. I started to take a step backwards, but his voice riveted me in place. "Listen," he repeated. "Really listen. I am not the quiet, simple character you make me out to be. My eyes are not vacant. Hours ago, they were full of fire when I grabbed the innkeeper's tunic with a tight grip and said, 'Don't you tell me there is not some room somewhere.' And he found a place for us. I'm a man with a purpose, to travel where I was told to go and to lead my family safely there. And we made it. And now that we are here, I'm still on guard, for we are in danger." Joseph continued, Yes, I wear brown, but it is for stealth. I blend in with my surroundings, and from my vantage point, my eyes scan every opening in this place for anyone who is out to do us harm, and no one will get by me. Let them try. I am the keeper of this light, and I will keep him safe. You are wrong about me. This is not who I am. I am real. Please, let me be real. His words soaked into me like the evening's mist. I felt admonished and awakened to something that was true. And then I heard a cry. I looked at Jesus in the wooden manger, and he was thrashing about in the hay. He had soiled himself, and he looked uncomfortable. His cloth was twisted in his arms and his legs. He grimaced from the prickly straw. His face was red, and his cry grew louder, the cry of a hungry infant. His toothless mouth opened, and he arched his back. He cried so hard he ran out of breath, and for a moment it was quiet. But I knew it was the quiet before he drew another breath, and then he wailed so loudly I expected the lights in the nearby houses to turn on and the neighbors to come running out. I wondered if he, too, would speak, but he didn't need to. Somehow his words were in me, and I spoke for him. This is not me. This is not real. Please, listen to me. The reason I came, the reason I was sent, was to be real, to feel everything you felt, to know everything you need because I needed it too, to hurt like you hurt, cry like you've cried, laugh like you've laughed, skin my knee like you've skinned your knee, and have my heart broken like your heart has been broken. I came so that one day or one winter night, when you come face to face with your defeat, your moment of absolute need, you can come to me and say, you know this too. Be with me and lead me through it. And I will. This is not me. I am real. Please, let me be real. Then there was a silence, a long stillness that hushed the wind and pushed away the noises of the night. In the quiet, I was being given room, room to feel and consider what I'd just seen and heard. And out of the silence, the truth appeared like stars revealed by the parting clouds. Maybe the figures before me weren't real because I'd made them that way, so they would be predictable and safe. Easy to ignore and box up after Christmas, out of sight and out of mind. Maybe if Jesus wasn't real, he would be tame and small. Maybe I had rendered him untouchable because I was afraid of his touch. I'm sorry, I said. I know this isn't you. I can see it now. You're not who I've seen you to be. Untouchable, perfect, something I made rather than someone who made me. You're real. You're true. You're here. I'm so sorry, I said again as my eyes brimmed with tears. The sorrow nudged me to kneel next to a shepherd on the wet grass in front of something so real, so very real, I couldn't even begin to comprehend it. And as I knelt, I became a part of the story, and the story became a part of me, and I felt his gentle pardon. Suddenly, everything expanded. This scene, this night, my heart, and I felt real. After a while, I stood and remained there, quietly looking at them as they gazed back at me. And I realized something. I liked these people now, and I think they liked me. Shivering, I wondered if Jesus was cold too. So I laid my scarf over his hands and his feet, the same hands and feet I would one day see again. I tucked him in as best I could. Good night, I said to him. Sleep well, You've traveled far. I stayed beside him for a few minutes, just as I once stayed beside my own newborn sons as they drifted into sleep. Then a low, regal voice came from one of the wise men. He whispered as if he was aware that Jesus was sleeping. We, like you, were drawn to this place and have journeyed far to come here to see what you have seen. And what you have seen is what this world has been waiting for. And from a shepherd standing behind Joseph, I heard another quiet voice. Once you hear the angels sing, you will never be the same. If you listen carefully, they're always singing. And then there was quiet. No more voices, no more movement, no more surprises. I sensed it was time to go. I started the walk back to my house. The cold wind and a few flakes of snow urged me along. My pace was slow and thoughtful. This walk had become a journey I didn't want to end. Something had returned to me, and I yearned for it to remain. When I reached the corner of the street, I thought I heard singing and turned for one last look. In the distance, I saw a warm glow coming from a small wooden stable in a yard down the street, sheltering something inside that was older than the stars and bigger than our whole wide world. And it was real.
Okay, well, as we finish out the show, we are going to, because of the request of listener Bethany Bennett, share some of our favorite Christmas memories. And so hopefully these will prompt some of your own. And we certainly enjoyed coming up with them ourselves. So listen in.
Hi, I'm JB. And one of my favorite Christmas memories was on Christmas Day when I was a little kid. I woke up in the morning and I had this tradition when I was very young of going out into our living room and not opening any presents or peeking inside them, but just sorting them, just trying to see how many everybody had. And I couldn't find any that had my name on them, so I got really worried all of a sudden, ran up to my parents' room, and was just wondering, Mom, Dad, what's going on here? Where are my presents? And they're like, did you look under the tree really carefully and read the piece of paper that was under there? So I said, no, I didn't. And I ran back down, I looked at the paper, it turns out they had created this huge scavenger hunt for me to find all the presents. So I went ahead and read it and told them I found it, and they're like, okay, you gotta wait now to do this so that we can see you try to find everything. So I found everything with them watching me, and it was fun to see all their reactions to me figuring out all these little clues that they had put together. And it was just a really enjoyable time. It kind of became a new yearly tradition that we did whenever I was a kid, and it's still something I'll always remember today.
Hey, this is John, and one of my favorite traditions around Christmas time is something that's actually a really new tradition I started with my sisters about 4 years ago. My sisters, who are all older than me, we decided we would stay up late and kind of wait for Santa, and so we made a Christmas, like a blanket fort out in our basement, and then every year since then, we've made a bigger and bigger blanket fort. The last time that we did it, It was so big that we were able to fit a queen bed and a twin bed inside the blanket fort, and it was pretty good. We also have a great rule that is, if you're married, you're not allowed in the blanket fort. So as my sisters end up getting married and as we get older, then like, it becomes a more and more exclusive club of the single people who get to sleep in the blanket fort.
I'm Catherine, and last Christmas, I had to work on Christmas Eve because I worked at a radio station, and so I was sitting there in the newsroom listening to all the police scanners around me and kind of bummed that I was working on Christmas Eve. It was almost midnight, and right when it turned midnight, someone started reading The Night Before Christmas over the police scanners. So I just sat there listening to them talk, and I was so thankful for people who make the best out of not the best situations on Christmas.
I'm Jake, and the Christmas memory that always comes to mind is when my dad and mom took all the money from my grandparents and bought myself and my siblings a bunch of paintball guns and masks, and we just invited a bunch of friends over and had these all-out paintball wars, and it was really fun. It was awesome. It was cold, right up until my dad decided to sneak up behind me when I was honing in on somebody else, and he didn't ask me to surrender. He didn't ask me to turn around because he loved me and I was his child and he wanted to give me a second chance. No, the man shot me straight in the square of my back and has still never apologized. Love you, Dad.
Hey, I'm Laura, and last year I flew the red eye home for Christmas, and when we got back to the house, I had been awake for about 30 hours, and my dad asked me to wrap my mother's Christmas presents. I did not remember that he asked me this, so on Christmas morning, all the presents had been unwrapped, and he asked me, "Where are your mother's presents?" I said, "I don't know. What did you do with them?" At this point, his face fell as he realized I had not wrapped the presents. They were not ready to go. And he ran upstairs in a tizzy. And a few minutes later, after some banging around, he comes back downstairs with all of my mother's Christmas presents wrapped in bath towels.
Hi, I'm Chris. I was raised in Texas, and my family never took us skiing. It was just not part of our family culture. But I learned how to ski at summer camp in Boy Scouts on this weird sponge sort of course. So my first experience of this was really bizarre. The first time I really went skiing and put this actually into practice was visiting family in Canada for Christmas a few years ago, and it was one of the best times I had because I realized that skiing was actually fun and not just painfully sliding down on this weird sponge-like material at 100 degrees in the middle of a Texas summer.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I was single, living in Los Angeles and working for Disneyland at a theater in downtown Hollywood one Christmas. We had a big potluck. Everyone brought all kinds of stuff, so much food. There was too much. So between our shows that we were doing, we took our leftovers out to the people living on the street. Well, we encountered a guy who said he'd eaten that day, but he knew lots of people who didn't. So he led us to all these different kinds of places that were hidden, and we handed out plates of food. It was awesome. At the end of the night, we ended up in a parking lot at the back of the theater. It was a very Charlie Brown Christmas moment. We all held hands and sang Silent Night. It was beautiful. My very favorite Christmas ever.
Hey, I'm Matt, and there's a tradition in my family where my dad will put on his hat and coat and gloves every Christmas Eve, and he'll just walk out into the dark, and he'll say, "Well, I'm back when I'm back," and he'll just disappear, and it's kind of his time to go ponder his year, the past year, and his time to go ponder the future year as well, and it's a habit that I've picked up and applied to other holidays as kind of a yearly ritual, and it's been very good for our family and for him and for me.
Well, those were some pretty fun memories, and you can see the power of experience and how it allows us to go back in time and remember the things about Christmas that are especially meaningful. Many of you know I grew up in California, and one of the things that my mom made us do before we could open our gifts on Christmas Eve, because being Scandinavian, apparently we opened our gifts on Christmas Eve. I don't know, Scandinavians can't wait, I guess, till Christmas morning. Mom would always make us go out caroling around the neighborhood and introduce ourselves to our neighbors, and she always made us sing in parts, and sometimes I even brought my flute and would play the flute. In California, you can do that. It's warm enough. But we would go as a family and carol throughout the neighborhood and introduce ourselves and invite people to church and all the different things that we, you know, had the opportunity to do at that time. And then we would go back. We had to make sure all the dinner dishes were washed up, and then we could start opening gifts. And I just realized, I mean, even though I always kind of begrudgingly did it back in the day, I realize now what an important important and really sweet family time that was for us to do that and make that a priority. And it really has given me some lasting memories. Now I try to pull my friends out to go caroling with me here in Colorado as well. Well, folks, that is it for this week's show. Again, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. Hopefully you will be doing meaningful things with friends and family. But most of all, we pray that you will remember, of course, the biggest reason for the season, and that is the arrival of Jesus Christ here on earth, who ultimately gives us the hope for eternity that we all need. So Merry Christmas from the Boundless team, the Boundless Show, and we will see you around next week on the Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.